This trip did not start off well. First of all, I had an accident at my home, and I had a problem with my knee, and the doctor thought that I had a fractured knee, and so that delayed me for a while. They finally gave me permission to leave, so I had to postpone my trip for several days. Pat took me to the airport in Huntsville. I boarded the plane, and they said, "I'm sorry, but we have a delay. There are some upper winds in Washington, and our flight was delayed 2 hours, which meant that I did not make my flight to Accra, Ghana. To make a long story short, I was supposed to arrive there on a Saturday morning. I wound up arriving there on Sunday afternoon. I had three stops on the final trip, one stop on the first trip. But I did finally arrive. It just so happened I arrived on my birthday. And I got a nice birthday greeting from some people that I met at the airport. Ghana is a very interesting country. It's in West Africa. If you're not acquainted with the countries in Africa, there are lots and lots of countries. Most all of them have a history of European colonialism. Ghana was one of the first sub-Saharan countries to declare independence from Europe. And it has had sort of a rocky history, but it seems that it has a relatively stable government at this point in time. The population is somewhere in the neighborhood of 33 million people, which is approximately one-tenth of the population of the United States. The land area is much, much smaller than the land area of the United States, which means that it's a lot more crowded. About one-fourth, I think this is right, about one-fourth of the roads in Ghana are paved. Now just think about it. If one-fourth of the roads in Alabama were paved, we'd be in bad shape, which means that they have problems with transportation. If you want to go somewhere, you're not going to go anywhere fast, because almost all African countries have this weird idea that even on a paved road, you put speed bumps on the highway, which means that once you get up to speed, and by the way, the maximum speed is generally 80 kilometers an hour, which is approximately 50 miles an hour. So once you get up to speed, you have to slow down for a speed bump. All of that is just minor. It's just minor irritations. I arrived on March the 31st. I came back home on April the 23rd, which meant I was in Ghana for 3 weeks. This was my fifth trip to Ghana. I will be working with two men, basically, a man by the name of Ebenezer Mabele, whom I had met online several years ago, and a man by the name of Michael Bruce. Michael is a native of Togo. I'm sure that you know exactly where Togo is. Now, if you can see this map, which you probably can't, this is Ghana. Right next door to Ghana, which would be to your right, that little small strip country, that's Togo, small country. The institutional brethren have worked Ghana and Togo extensively. And there are a number of churches, there are many churches both in Ghana and in Togo. One of the problems is that Togo has, as well as Ghana, has a rather large number of Muslims. And according to Sharia law, a Muslim man can have four wives. Well, according to the gospel law, a man who is a Christian, just a man period, any man can have only one wife. So if you want to convert a Muslim, one of the things he has to be taught is you can have one wife. Well, our institutional brethren do not teach them that. They have a theory called progressive repentance, which means that, first of all, you tell them about Jesus and the gospel and you baptize them. Then you will later tell them about the marital situation. Well, that's really not very good gospel policy. It was interesting. I think maybe last year I was either talking face to face with Sewell Hall or we were corresponding some way. But when Sewell lived in Nigeria, Sewell was one of the first American brethren to take the gospel to Ghana, which I did not know. This would be in the late 1940s or early 1950s. So the gospel has been in Ghana for a number of years. I worked with Ebenezer for the past 3 years, and he lives in a town that I can spell it, but it's hard to pronounce. D-Z-O-D-Z-E. Now you pronounce that. It's pronounced Zodzi. It's not a big town, and I stayed in a place called the White Dove Hotel. Now that sounds really exotic, doesn't it? One of the problems with Ghana, like many African countries, there is no stable electrical grid, which means the electricity will go off almost every day at some point in time. Now, I made sure that the hotel, which I've stayed at before, has a generator. The problem is the manager does not like to run the generator because the generator uses fuel, and he doesn't like to buy fuel because fuel is expensive. I will show you, I have a graphic that will show you the temperature. Usually the highest temperature in the afternoon is going to be anywhere between 91 and 95 degrees. Now, we were about probably 35 miles north of the Gulf of Guinea, which is part of the Atlantic Ocean, which means it's very humid. So the heat index is going to be over 100 degrees almost every day. Now you're down here shivering, and I'm up there over there sweating. And Africa is a good diet-controlled place to go, because I can almost guarantee you, if you stay there for any length of time, you're going to lose weight for two reasons. First of all, it's going to be the weather. It's going to be hot. Ghana is north of the equator. Now you may think, well, then they're in the same seasonal period that we are. Yes, but there are no real seasons there. There is a wet season, there's a dry season. We were sort of in the shoulder of the wet season. So it's either hot and wet or it's hot and dry. So it's hard to tell. How do you pack for that? You pack with an umbrella, first of all. So if you keep up with my Facebook, Flat Stanley and I go back a long ways. Well, when I got to the hotel, Bruce Michael had a package for me. And I unwrapped the package, and there is Stanley. He had Stanley carved. This is, by the way, this is solid wood. The problem is that 2 years ago, I was in Chile, and this is a Chilean outfit. It's not African. And he evidently found a picture of Stanley, and he found an artisan, and the artisan carved Stanley for me. I had to look at it. Stanley does not wear eye makeup. So I'm going to have to get Pat to doctor Mr. Stanley, so at least he'll be recognizable. These two men I have never worked with before. The man on your left, no, I'm sorry, the man, this man right here, I'm going to call him Zigbee. Again, the spelling, you cannot pronounce it. Your tongue gets all twisted up. Well, I'm going to call him Zigbee. And this man over here is Emmanuel. Both of these men are preachers. Emmanuel, it has a construction business, and he works with this congregation. We're inside the building. Now, you can't tell much about the building, but I will tell you, for the most part, the building is kind of like an open-air auditorium with no window panes, which means that anything can fly in. It doesn't have screens either, by the way. Anything can fly in that can go between the bars. Most of them do not have light fixtures. This one does have electricity because there are two ceiling fans in this building. Now, we're not going to meet in this building for a while, but this is going to be the place where I'm going to have 2 days of lectures at the very end of the trip. But we meet at this building. This is the first time I've met these gentlemen. And we're going to be going house to house. House to house work in America basically doesn't work. For the several reasons. Number one, during the daytime, nobody's home. Everybody's gone working. Secondly, most of the time, if anybody is home, I'm sorry, I'm already religious, go somewhere else. But in Africa, when you do house-to-house work, first of all, you don't go inside the house. You sit outside, generally under a tree, which I have plenty of pictures of sitting under a tree, or you may be sitting under like a little porch. But you're sitting almost on the ground because the little stools, I said, listen, I will never get up off this stool if I get down on the stool. So generally they will find a chair. They will find a plastic chair for me, and I will sit in a chair. But this is how you do house-to-house work. You'll find people, the women generally, will be sitting around, and they'll be doing a number of different things. They'll be either making something in a big cauldron, some sort of a soup, or they'll be boiling something, and I'll explain that in just a little bit. Or they will be peeling a cassava, or they'll be doing washing. They'll have a big tub, they'll have a fire built up under it, and they'll be doing all this sort of stuff. So they would generally be doing something. One lady had palm fronds, you know, the little spine on the palm frond, all the leaves are gone, and she's stripping this palm frond of all the little stickers on it. Well, what in the world is she going to do with that? Well, she's going to use that palm frond to weave baskets out of. She'll sit there under that tree and all day, and she'll have a whole pile of those little old palm fronds. You talk about repetitious work. Just imagine sitting there day after day doing that sort of work. But that's the sort of thing that is done almost every day in almost every village. So these gentlemen will be sort of like the bird dogs. They'll go ahead of us and they'll find some people sitting around and they'll make arrangements. Are you interested? Yes, yes. So we'll sort of follow along after them. They'll start the conversation, and then we'll come along later and pick up after them. Now, I think the first conversation we had, there was a young man named, what was his name? Faith, I think. But he wanted to be baptized. And generally speaking, we can start off by saying, are you a Christian? Yes or no? And if they're a Christian, can you please tell me, how did you become a Christian? And generally, that opens the door to find out how a person learned how to become a Christian. Most people do not have a Bible. Once in a while, you'll find someone that has a tattered Bible, and they'll bring it out. But if you ask someone, do you have a Bible, the answer generally is no. And we made it a point on this trip that every person who was baptized gets a Bible, because that's their food. They need nourishment. And we try to tell them you need to read the Bible every day. And these gentlemen, these two men, are going to tell you how to read the Bible. Now that, you may think, well, why insult these people? Why do you have to tell them how to read the Bible? Well, just think about it. If you hand a person a book, where are you going to start reading in the book? You'll start at the very beginning, won't you? But what they need to do is, they need to start at the place where they gain the nourishment from Christ. So you start in the New Testament. So this is the place where most of the baptisms will take place. This is an old abandoned rock quarry, which has gotten filled up with water. Now, that sounds really neat. But I also found a lot of cattle tracks going down into that. And all the little accoutrements that go along with those cattle tracks, you know, little cow patties and all that go along with it. And I'll show you another picture about some other things that take place in this abandoned quarry. But this is where this young man was baptized. And a brother will wade out there. He has a stick poking around to see if there's any holes in there. And generally what is done, they'll get out to where the water is maybe up to here, and they'll have the person sit down. And then they'll lay the person either forward or backward. So you don't have to go out really deep water. Now you may think this is an abandoned rock quarry, so the water's really nice and clean. Well, it's not. In fact, you cannot see the bottom even near the shoreline. But water, it's water. And that's all they needed. And so this would be the go-to place, which is really neat, but the problem is it's a good 15 or 20 minutes away from almost any village So depending on what village you're in, you may have to travel 30 minutes or so to get to the water. And this is the first baptism, and you can see they're not very far out in the water, but he can be immersed in that just little amount of water. Now, this is a very common scene. Everybody's out under the tree. And you'd be surprised how much a little bit of shade will knock down the temperature. Generally, there is some kind of a breeze, and if you can get under a shade tree, it's almost like having air conditioning. I said almost. It's not like air conditioning, but at least it will knock a little bit of the heat down. And this is where almost all of the work is done. There are all kinds of trees around. They don't chop down trees in the village because this is their meeting places and this is their workplaces. So there are lots of trees in the villages, and this is where they will congregate. Oftentimes, the women will congregate under one tree, and especially in the evening, if you're near a town or something, the men will congregate under a tree, and they may be playing checkers, or they just may be talking among themselves. But gathering under the trees, very common, and almost an everyday experience. Now, this is the outside of this church building. The name of this place, the little village, is Tsave. T-S-V, let me see if I can spell it. T-S-I-A-V-E-M-E, Tsave. Now, a lot of this is French sounding because part of their language is based on French. I cannot even begin to tell you. I cannot even duplicate the way their language sounds. They speak Ewe, E-W-E, like a lamb. They speak Ewe here, which, as far as I can see, Ewe is sort of a language that has migrated from the East, probably back in the 1700s and 1800s when they migrated into that area. So there are a number of different languages in Ghana. The only good thing about this is that English is the official language of Ghana. So almost anywhere you go, you'll be able to communicate with people in English in business. Now, you cannot communicate with people in English in normal everyday conversation because not everyone understands English. It's interesting, only one person requested an English Bible. All of the others wanted a Bible in their native language. So you have to have someone who will interpret for you. And that's kind of tricky business because the Bible contains language. It contains words which are not used in ordinary language, in ordinary conversation. When is the last time you use words such as atonement in your ordinary or propitiation? Those are important words. But you have to find someone, and fortunately, both Michael, but especially Ebenezer, has a very good command of the English language, and he knows the Bible fairly well. So he is the one who normally is going to be the interpreter for me. This is something else that takes place in that rock quarry. They're going to wash their clothes in it. Now, ladies, how would you like to have to take up? And by the way, this is well off the road. How do they get there? Well, you see those buckets? They put their clothes in the buckets. They put the buckets on top of their heads, and they walk. They carry most everything is carried on the top of their heads. They'll walk down to this quarry. They'll wash their clothes. And sometimes they will put them on bushes or out on the ground to let them dry. More than likely, they'll put them back on the bucket in the buckets, put them back on their heads, and walk back to their village, and then spread them out to dry. But this is also the local washateria. So lots of things go on in this place. I think on the second or third day, I think there were four people baptized that day. I think that was the highest number of people who were baptized at one time. And we all went down. I say we all went down. We had one car. It was a taxi, an old taxi. That taxi must have been 30 years old. And I'm the one that most always rode in the taxi, and I wanted in the back seat. I didn't want in the death seat, which is the right-hand front seat. But if we go to the water, I had to sit in the front seat because everybody else was crammed like sardines in the back seat. But these people, there was, let's see, one lady and three men. There were two ladies and two men baptized that day. Now, I think I can get this to work. Those bookmarks started out this way. And let me see if I can do this. I want you to watch it. There is no electricity here. And this is normal speed. It's amazing. And you'll notice all of the men are weavers. I mean, all the weavers are men. And they'll sit there for hours. That little shuttle, I don't see how they move that shuttle so fast. And those designs come from up here. There's no template that they use. And the material, you see this blue cloth. This blue cloth will stretch probably for 30 yards back behind them. This will be the base that they're using to weave upon. And it'll be, I think I've got a picture of how long the basic piece will be when they finish weaving it. But they'll sit there for hours on end doing this. That's the way they make money. And when I saw what they were doing, I thought, you know, this thing's about this wide. I believe we can make some bookmarks out of this. And so I made a deal with the guy, this guy right here doing the, and by the way, we were talking the Bible while they were weaving. I made a deal with the guy. How much would you charge me to get enough material to make, say, 150 bookmarks? And I think we made a deal like, by the way, this is their currency. This is a CD. I think they got larger banknotes than this, but I'd never got a one any larger than this. This is worth about $7.50. And you can buy a Coca-Cola for about 50 to 60 cents, I think. Most foodstuffs are relatively cheap. Unless you go to a restaurant, and then the food gets more expensive. So I made a deal with this guy. I think that I paid him 450 CDs, which would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $40, between $35 and $40. So he was very glad to get the business. I mean, there are four to six of these guys. All of them are kind of working under this big tree. So it took them several days to get all the material. Now, this is the length of the material. By the way, this is our taxi. You like the colors? Really, I mean, you can't miss that taxi. And the guy that drives the taxi is named Mono. I don't know what that stands for. I don't know if that's for mononucleosis or what that's for. But he is the taxi driver, and he's a Christian, by the way. I paid him 400 CDs a day. That's somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 to $32 per day. So I put that on the hood of his car to show you I don't know how long it would take him to weave this length of material, but it'd take him several hours to do that. And I don't remember how many bookmarks we can get from one of these, but that requires more work. So I made a deal with Michael's wife. By the way, Michael's wife has cancer. She's had cancer for going on 2 years. And when I found out about it, made arrangements that the Hillsborough Heights Church in Moulton, which no longer exists, but at that time did exist, the Hillsborough Heights Church, along with a family in Atlanta, got together and we provided the money for her cancer treatment. Hopefully she will finish her treatments in February of next year. At this point in time, the doctor says she's doing well. And by the time she finishes her treatment, she should be in remission, which is good news. But I made a deal with Michael. Michael, see if your wife will sew the seams on these bookmarks. Yeah, she'd be glad to do it, but she's not going to take any money. I said, well, she's not going to do the work then. If she won't take any money, we'll find somebody else to do it. Well, That's what you call twisting her arm. Her arm was twisted and she took the money. So this cottage business like this provides money that is hard to come by. You think in our country, all you have to do is go look at, there are plenty of jobs available for people. In most African countries, it's just a dream. Jobs are hard to find, and many, many African Christians are out of work, and it's a very difficult condition. Well, now, again, we're under the tree, but what you don't know is we're talking to the chief or the king. The king is this guy right here on your right. He doesn't look like a king, does he? But he's a king. He's the king of his village. But the king needed the gospel just like anybody else did. Most of our conversations last for between 45 minutes and an hour. And by the time we get to the end of our conversation, either they say, "We want the water," or "No, thank you." So the king said, "When I have a convenient season, I will call you to me." The king wasn't interested on that day. Well, here are two ladies. Now, one of the big differences in modesty in America and modesty in Africa is that I don't think that there is any woman in this audience, if you were a mother and you were a nursing mother, that you would nurse your child in an assembly like this. It is not unusual for a woman to nurse her child in the public. It's just, even during church services. And this woman, several times, would nurse her child while we were talking the Bible. That's very common in Africa. And it took me a while to get accustomed to that, because it's not done here. A woman would modestly cover herself. No, not in that. Not in most, at least most of the African countries where I've been. So there are some things that you just have to get accustomed to and overlook as part of their custom, part of their culture. This woman, by the way, was not baptized that day. I think maybe 2 days later, she was. You see this white stuff right here? This white stuff is cassava. Now, cassava is a tuber. It grows, the plants will grow quite tall. It will take about a year for the tuber to become mature. And what you can't see is all these people are crowded around a machine, and what that machine is doing is grinding up this cassava. The ladies will get the cassava root, and the root may be this big around. You can find cassava, by the way. I think you can find it. I know you can find it in a Mexican store. Sometimes you can find it in Publix. But it's a long root with a dark skin on it. Don't eat the skin, because the skin has cyanide in it. But they feed it to the goats. Goats can eat cyanide and it's okay. They feed the skins to the goats. So they will peel the skins. And by the way, they don't use a potato peeler. They use a knife about this long. So it's kind of disconcerting to be talking to some ladies about the Bible and they're using this big knife, and you don't want to make them angry while they've got that big blade going, and they never miss a lick while you're talking to them about the scripture while they're peeling cassava. But they'll peel the cassava, and then they will wash it, and then they'll take it to the grinder, and they will either boil it whole like this, or they will grind it up in flour, and they make all sorts of breads. Cassava is a staple of the African diet. It doesn't have a lot of nutrition, but it will really fill you up. It is high in calories, carbohydrates. It has little or no protein. And most African diets are very, very protein poor. Most people do not eat meat on a regular basis, on a daily basis. So they have a problem getting protein in their diets. And that's a big problem when I would pay them money to feed because they would get two or three different kind of meat. And so I would try to get just as little bit of the meat as I can and let them get the meat, because they don't get meat very often. Well, these two people, I think this is a husband and wife. By the time we finished this conversation, there were at least two or three more people there. But these people belong to what is called the Apostolic Church. And they have 12 apostles. And I wanted to take the picture, but they covered the picture back up. But they have a picture of the 12 apostles, and they're all dressed in white. And I asked them, how do you become an apostle? I think maybe they thought I was interested in becoming an apostle. But they told me something. And I said, listen, did you know that the Bible teaches that in order to be an apostle, you had to see Jesus Christ after his resurrection from the dead? You have to travel with Jesus from his baptism until he went back to heaven? No. And so how can someone be an apostle today? Well, that doesn't work with people like that, because those 12 men have convinced them that they're apostles, and you don't argue with apostles. So our study with them basically was, I wouldn't say it is fruitless, because the seed was sown. And that's all our responsibility is, sowing the seed. Our responsibility is not to baptize people. Our responsibility is sowing the seed. And while there were 13 people baptized on this trip, if there were no people baptized on this trip, would the trip have been successful? I believe it would have been, because the seed was sown. Sometimes the seed takes a while to germinate. And it's not up to us to make the results. We plant, water, God gives the increase. Well, I told you they do different things in different pots. Well, they're boiling palm nuts in this. They make some kind of a big soup. I did not want to taste that soup because it is nasty looking. If you can get up here, you can see all this fibrous stuff in here. It just doesn't look good at all. You cannot tell what this is. So I'll have to tell you what it is. It's a still. They're making liquor here. Legally. I mean, it's in the village for everybody to see. I asked, what do they do with all this wood here? Because most of the ladies cook with wood. They don't have anything like bottle gas, anything like a stove. They cook. Usually there are some stones in a little circle. They'll put the wood between those stones and put the pot on the stones. That's their stove. And they use wood for the fuel. I said, what do they do with all this wood? He said, see all that? That's their still. Well, here is a brother and a sister. And now, at the end of our discussion, they are brothers and sisters in two ways. Now they are brothers and sisters in the Lord. I said, do you have a Bible? Yes. They had their grandmother's Bible. So they knew something about the Bible, and there was no hesitation. When we got to the idea about their being baptized into Christ, yes. When? Now. Most people say, well, maybe in a day or two. How about next week? They said, we want to do it now. So we were convinced. When I say we, I mean Ebenezer and I and the other brothers with us, we were convinced. They had no hesitation. They knew exactly what they wanted to do and when they needed to do it. This is the lady doing the palm fronds. You see all that stuff? How long did it take her to do that? She's got that knife just going, and she can talk, and she can get that knife going, and all she's doing is taking the little knots off of that palm frond, so that she can weave her baskets with it. Well, this is Mercy. This is Michael's daughter. She has sickle cell anemia, and she has had several attacks in the last couple of years. She's been in the hospital several times, and Michael says every time she has one of those attacks, he said, I just cry because she hurts so bad. The doctor has told him she probably won't live past the age of 20. Now, there is a cure, a relatively new cure. It involves gene replacement. And obviously, it is very, very expensive. There's just no way that he could afford it. So we're helping to pay. When I say we, there are several people along with some funds from the Hillsborough Heights Church, that she's on a drug that will not cure it, but it will keep the attacks of sickle cell from happening as frequently. Plus, she is on a vitamin and I'll have to think what the vitamin is, which I buy at CVS. I take several bottles with me when I go. This also will help to prevent the attacks from occurring as often as they do. She is 12 years, in fact, she had a birthday while I was there. She's 12 years old. They had a son, 5 years old, who died last year from sickle cell. Sickle cell anemia is a terrible disease, and it afflicts a number of Africans in America as well as in Africa, but in particular in Africa, that if you're not acquainted with what sickle cell anemia is, Google it. It's a terrible disease. Well, let's see. This is in the, I guess they would call this is the sanctuary in the Cry of the Bride Church building. Cry of the Bride. I've never heard a church call that. Ebenezer had arranged, he knows the pastor there, and he had arranged for me to address them on a Saturday, on Friday evening. Nobody showed up. So we went over there on Saturday, and just so happened the pastor was there. And so we had about an hour and a half discussion. And so he said, how would you like to come on Sunday after our meeting? Come about 11:30 after we finish with our service. How about coming 11:30? I said, okay, be there. I was there at 11:30. Nobody left. Everybody was there. And I spoke for about an hour and a half. They did not. Well, they did use those things, but when I started speaking, I didn't hear those things anymore. They had drums, they had a keyboard, and all that sort of stuff. And I invited the pastor to come to our seminar the next week. Unfortunately, he did not come. This would never happen in America. To go into a denominational church and be invited to speak and with no restrictions on what you can speak on, which I did. I said, what is the church? And I tried to explain what the church is. And we had a question and answer period of about 45 minutes, had good questions. And so the seed was sown there. This is the inside of their building. Kind of quaint, isn't it? This is very normal. And you can imagine, if it's 95 degrees outside, you see that tin roof? No insulation up there. And you can just imagine all that heat radiating down. Just use your imagination. Oh, here, this young woman's name, but I've just given them a Bible, and you can tell how happy they are. They have this very serious look on their face. Almost every picture that I took of any young man or young woman, they never smile. Well, this is the seminar. I don't remember exactly. This was either Friday or Saturday. I don't remember which it was. We had about 75 people at the seminar. It was an all-day affair. We began in the morning around 9:30. We had a break for lunch, and then we had a question and answer period in the afternoon for 2 days. And anybody who wanted to come could come. So we had a number of people coming. And this was my lunch, Coca-Cola even. And not only is it a Coca-Cola, it is a Coke Zero. But it is hot. It is not chilled. I said, that's okay. Don't worry about it. Now, they oftentimes have a problem getting grape juice. So this is, and I have to read the label here, this is called communion wine. It is non-alcoholic. This is a very good substitution for Welch's grape juice when you cannot find grape juice. And it's very hard, very difficult for them to find. In many African countries, getting grape juice for the Lord's Supper is a real challenge. So I was really very pleased to find that when I saw that bottle, I said, uh-oh. But when I read the label, I saw it says non-alcoholic communion wine. And they buy it locally, which is kind of interesting. Now, let's see. Michael is on your left. This is Michael. And Victor is the young guy on the right. Now, Victor is from Togo. We were supposed to go to Togo for 3 days. Michael was born in Togo, which is French-speaking, but his family moved to Ghana when he was fairly young. But he's kept in contact with people in Togo, and he's kept in contact with Victor. Victor lives in his hometown. And we were going, I said, Michael, are you sure that I can get a visa at the border? Oh, yes, no problem. He said, I've talked to the people there. Said, okay. So we go to the border on Tuesday. We were going to be there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, come back Friday. So we get to the border, and I could tell by the look on Michael's face something is not right. Well, there had been a demonstration in Lomé. Lomé is the capital of Togo. And the government had closed the border. And they changed all the rules for getting a visa. You have to get a visa online now, and it takes 3 days. So we stayed there for an hour or so. Ebenezer's on the computer. He's trying to do this online. And finally he said it'd take 3 days to get the visa. Well, it's just obvious we cannot go to Togo. I said, why don't we bring the guy in Togo? Why don't we bring him here? And he can stay with us. He can come to the seminar. That'd be great if he wants to come. So Michael got in touch with him. And this is Victor. So Victor came from Togo. He came on Thursday. Stayed in the same hotel where I am. And when I use the word hotel, that's a little bit, when you think about a hotel, you think about this high rise. No, this is the tallest building was like 2 stories. It's spread out all over the place. It's not a bad place. But the guy just doesn't like it to use a generator. So he stayed in one room. I stayed in another room. But he came to the seminar, and we discussed some things about what congregations do. And I've mentioned before, that the Institutional Brethren have worked Togo hard. And Victor takes support from an institutional church. And when that seminar was over, he said, Brother, he said, I've learned some things I've never known before. And he said, I'm having a problem. He said, I don't think I can take money from so-and-so anymore. I said, well, that's your choice. You have to make up your mind what you're going to do. But I can tell you, if you decide that you're not going to take funds from so-and-so anymore, you're going to have a hard time, because almost all of these brothers around here do. And the way many of these brothers, these institutional brothers, operate is they throw money at everything. They think money is the cure for everything. And I got a note from Victor today on WhatsApp, and he said, I explained to the brothers at church today that I'm going to stop taking money from Doc Turk. And he said, I suggested to the brethren that we stop having Doc Turk come here and working with us. And some of the men objected to this. So we're having a meeting on May the 1st. And he said, if they do not agree, he said, I may have to leave. So what do? When your convictions demand that you can no longer have fellowship with people who are doing things that you now know are not correct, you have to make a choice. And sometimes those choices are pretty far-reaching. The only good thing about Victor is he doesn't have a family. He's single. I left a little bit of money with Michael and told him, Michael, if he goes through with this, if he does cut off his support, here's $100. He needs $100 per month for support. You let me know what he decides to do. Well, I heard from Victor today. He's told me that he's going to have that support stopped if the brothers decide that they're going to continue having the institutional brethren working with them. So while there were a number of people baptized, there are 3 men who are in that area, one of them in Togo, that's Victor, Emmanuel and Didzi. These 3 men have seen some things about the arrangements which they've been participating in for years and never questioned. But now they have seen that these things are not scriptural. And they've that there have been questions raised in their minds, and now they are in a quandary, what are we going to do about it? And those are hard decisions to make when you have to stand alone and you're virtually surrounded by churches. And by the way, when we think about churches, we think about people coming in the building and singing and praying together. But some of these churches own businesses. Some of these churches supply bore wells for water for villages. Some of these churches own medical clinics. So it's not just a matter of having a congregation. It's a matter of being in business. And that's what many of them do. So some of these men now are having their eyes opened to see that there are things that we've been doing which Scripture does not support. And I'm hoping that they're going to follow through and they're going to come to conviction that we're going to have to stand on our own two feet. It will not be popular and it may be tough. But if their convictions are strong enough, they will do that. This is Ebenezer. This is the church building where, and see the building? It has no walls. And the wind is blowing. You see that little blanket, those little curtains back in the back? They're continuously flapping all the time because of the wind. Now, which is great until it starts raining. Then that's a different story. This is the congregation. I didn't count how many there are. I think there are between 35 and 40 people. And they meet there every Sunday. The building, I think, is maybe 3 years old. And they've done almost all the work themselves. So it's, and it's outside of the village. It has no, it has no electricity. So there are no ceiling fans and no lights, which means that most churches do not meet in the evening because they have no lighting. Oh, this is 91 degrees and the heat index is 106. Okay, that's it. That says keep calm. This is the end of the presentation. Thank you very much for listening. It's been my pleasure. I'm really sorry we could not do this on the screen. That was my fault. I should have brought some other stuff with me, but I did not. And you can just chalk that up to being an old geezer. We old people forget stuff, okay? As I said, there were 13 people baptized on this trip, and that is not unusual. I suspect that had I stayed there longer, there would have been more people baptized. But 3 weeks is a long time in Africa, and I was ready to come home. And one of the reasons I was ready to come home is because I developed a hernia while I was there, and I'm going to have hernia surgery on Friday, and I'm anxious to get that done. So if you'll excuse me, I'm going to sit down in just a moment. But at the end of this service, I think it's customary, if there's anyone who has decided today's the day that I want to be baptized into Christ, now's the time, or if there's some way in which the church here can help you, we're going to sing this song that we can be encouragement to you. So you come while we stand and sing.